A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Today we're tackling a problem that's been bugging me for years, and I suspect a lot of you too. Here's what Daniel wrote to us. I'd like to chat today about a topic that's niche even by our standards. I was a long-term renter for 10 years and got into home networking a few years ago. I spent a lot of time putting down Ethernet runs that were non-ideal, but dictated rather by what one can do as a renter. Think lots of plastic clip cables and flat Ethernet cables, running under doors if there was a path, and hoping for the best. For the most part, these have worked fine, but I have to admit there's something of an eyesore. Let's talk about cable management options for non-permanent networking installations. What one can do to make cable runs less conspicuous while still providing decent runs and clamping for the duration of a tenancy. He's got four specific questions. 1. How do you know if a doorframe is okay to run a cable under and around? 2. Cable braiding and sleaze. Different materials and colors for blending into walls. 3. Adhesive options that require no touch-up or minimal touch-up to paint upon removal. And 4. Overall ways to take advantage of wired connections for maximum throughput without making the apartment look like a disordered data center or having to spend a day before move-out painting and spudging. So, let's break this down, starting with the thing that probably worries people most. Am I going to destroy my doorframe?
The short answer is, it depends on the doorframe and the cable. Standard interior doorframes, the kind found in most apartments built in the last 40 years, have a gap on the hinge side between the door and the doorstop molding. That gap is typically 1/8 of an inch to 1/4 of an inch, 3 to 6 millimeters. Flat Ethernet cables are about 1.2 millimeters thick. Round Cat 6 cables are 5 to 6 millimeters. Right away, you can see the math problem.
So the flat cable slides through with room to spare, and the round cable is basically the same thickness as the gap itself.
If your gap is on the tight end, say 3 millimeters, and your round cable is 5 millimeters, you're compressing something. The doorstop molding is usually just finish nailed to the jamb. Over weeks of opening and closing the door, that cable acts like a tiny wedge, pushing the stop molding outward by fractions of a millimeter each time. Eventually, the paint seal cracks, the molding works loose, and you've got visible damage.
And Daniel's instinct was right. You can wreck a doorframe this way without ever meaning to. What's the test he could do before running anything?
The credit card test. Take a standard credit card. They're about 0.76 millimeters thick. Slide it through the gap at the hinge side with the door closed. If it passes through with no resistance, a flat cable is absolutely safe. If it's snug, a flat cable will still probably work, but you want to check it after a week. If the credit card won't go through at all, don't run any cable through that gap, period.
And if it fails the credit card test, what then?
That's where alternative routing comes in. And honestly, even if the doorframe passes the test, I'd still look at alternatives first. Doorframes are pinch points. Every time that door closes, the cable takes a tiny bit of compression. Over months, flat cables can develop internal breaks at the pinch line, not from visible damage, but from repeated microflexing. The best doorframe is the one you don't use.
So where else do you go?
Baseboards are the obvious first choice. Most baseboards have a small gap between the bottom edge and the floor. It's there to accommodate carpet and floor expansion. You can take a putty knife, gently pry the bottom of the baseboard away from the wall by maybe 1/16 of an inch, and tuck a flat cable behind it. No adhesive, no clips, completely invisible. When you move out, pull the cable and the baseboard flexes right back. Nobody ever knows.
I've done exactly that in 3 different apartments. The putty knife is the secret weapon of rental networking.
It really is. And if the baseboard gap isn't workable, some apartments have baseboards caulked to the floor. You can go up. Crown molding, if you have it, has a similar gap at the top. Clear adhesive clips along the top edge of crown molding are nearly invisible from floor level. Or you can run along the corner where the wall meets the ceiling and paint the clips to match.
Let me pause you there, because Daniel specifically asked about door frames, and I want to make sure we cover the damage mechanism properly. What about the door itself? Can you damage the door by running a cable under it?
It depends on the door. Hollow core interior doors, the kind in most bedrooms, are basically two thin sheets of veneer over a cardboard honeycomb. If you run a cable that's too thick and it creates a pressure point, the bottom rail can bow upward slightly. After a few months, the door might not latch properly because the alignment has shifted. Solid core doors don't have this problem. They're heavy enough that a 1 mm cable isn't going to deform anything.
So the hollow core door is actually more vulnerable than the frame in some cases.
In some cases, yeah. And exterior doors are a completely different animal. They have weather stripping at the bottom, that rubber or brush seal. Running any cable under an exterior door compresses the weather stripping and creates a gap that lets in drafts, dust, bugs. For exterior doors, you really want to go around, not under. Use a flat cable and run it along the threshold, tucked under the door sweep if there's clearance, or route through the wall if you can access an adjacent outlet box.
Alright, so we've established that door frames are the biggest risk, and there are better alternatives. Let's talk about what you actually run the cable along once you've chosen your path, which brings us to braiding, sleeving, and raceways.
This is where the aesthetic part of Daniel's question comes in, and it's the part most people skip. They run a bright blue Cat 6 cable along a white baseboard and wonder why it looks terrible. The fix isn't hiding the cable. It's making the cable not worth noticing.
And that starts with the cable itself.
Flat Cat 6 cables are already better for this than round ones because they sit flush against the wall and cast less of a shadow. But the real upgrade is sleeving. TechFlex Pet Expandable Sleeving. The braided mesh stuff you see in high-end PC builds comes in over 20 colors. The ones that matter for rental networking are wall white, almond, and gray. Wall white matches most modern US interior paint. Almond matches older off-white and rental beige. Gray blends with conduit and electrical boxes.
How do you actually use it? You're not going to sleeve a 50-foot cable by hand.
You absolutely can, and it's not as painful as it sounds. The sleeving expands when you push it together. It gets shorter and fatter. You feed the cable through, then stretch the sleeving back out, and it contracts around the cable. For a 50-foot run, it takes maybe 15 minutes. Use a piece of masking tape to cap the connector in so it doesn't snag. A 100-foot roll of 1/4-inch TechFlex is about $12.
And if you want something more rigid than a fabric sleeve?
That's where raceways come in. D-Line is the brand that comes up constantly in rental forums. They make paintable PVC raceway channels that use 3M VHB adhesive, very high bond, which is a foam acrylic tape. The key thing about VHB is how it fails when you remove it. If you pull it away from the wall at a 90-degree angle, it can take paint with it. But if you stretch it parallel to the wall surface, the stretch-release technique, the adhesive fails cohesively. It stretches into a long string and releases without pulling on the paint at all.
So the removal angle is everything.
It's everything. Most paint damage from adhesive removal isn't because the adhesive was too strong. It's because someone grabbed the corner of the raceway and yanked it straight outward. You want to pull along the wall, not away from it. And if the adhesive has been up for more than 6 months, hit it with a hairdryer on low for 30 seconds first. The heat softens the acrylic and makes the stretch release even cleaner.
Let's talk about the command clip ecosystem, because that's what Daniel was using. The plastic clip cables, as he called them.
Command brand adhesive clips are the standard recommendation for a reason. They use the same foam acrylic technology, and they're specifically rated for painted drywall. The cord clips come in clear and white, and the clear ones nearly disappear on white walls. For a single flat Cat 6 cable, the mini clear clips are all you need. Space them every 18 inches, and the cable stays flat against the wall without sagging.
What about the weight limit? Some of those Command products are rated for like 1/2 pound.
For a single Ethernet cable, weight isn't the issue, it's the peel force. A 50-foot Cat 6 cable weighs less than 1 pound total. Even the smallest command clip is rated for 1/4 pound, and you're using 20 of them on a 50-foot run. Each clip is holding maybe 1/20 of a pound. They're not going anywhere.
Daniel also mentioned spudging, scraping adhesive residue before move, out. What's the no-spudge approach?
The no-spudge approach is choosing the right products up front and removing them correctly. Command strips, D-Line VHB, and most 3M foam acrylic adhesives will remove cleanly if you follow the stretch release method. For anything that does leave residue, and some cheaper raceways use different adhesives that definitely will. You want 91% isopropyl alcohol on a microfiber cloth, not 70% not rubbing alcohol. The higher concentration evaporates faster and doesn't soak into the paint. Rub gently in circles, and the residue balls up and comes off. Never use a metal scraper on painted drywall. Plastic razor blades exist for exactly this purpose and cost $3 for a pack of 20.
I've seen people use Goo Gone for this too.
Goo Gone works, but it's oil-based. You have to wash the wall with soap and water afterward, or the paint will look different in that spot, slightly shinier. Isopropyl alcohol leaves no residue at all. It's the cleaner choice, literally.
All right. We've covered the hardware. Now let's talk about the stuff that actually touches your walls. The adhesive removal science is worth a minute, because I think most people don't understand why some adhesives destroy paint and others don't.
It comes down to the failure mode. Most adhesives fail adhesively, meaning the bond between the adhesive and the surface breaks. When that happens on painted drywall, the adhesive can be stronger than the bond between the paint and the drywall paper. The paint comes off with the adhesive. That's the nightmare scenario.
And the foam acrylic stuff fails differently.
It fails cohesively. The adhesive itself stretches and breaks internally rather than breaking the bond with the wall. When you pull a command strip parallel to the wall, you're not fighting the adhesive to paint bond. You're stretching the foam until it tears apart. The adhesive stays attached to the strip, not to your wall. That's the entire innovation.
So the physics of it is, pull sideways and the thing destroys itself before it destroys your paint.
And the 0-degree angle is critical. Even a 15-degree angle off the wall starts to introduce peel forces. Command actually includes instructions showing this. Stretch the tab slowly, keep it against the wall, and pull until the strip releases. It takes about 30 seconds per strip, which is why people get impatient and yank. Don't yank.
What about timeline? Daniel's talking about a tendency. Potentially years. Does the adhesive get stronger over time?
It does. 3M's own documentation says command strips should ideally be removed within 12 months. After that, the adhesive continues to cure and the bond strengthens. It's not that you can't remove them after 2 years, you usually can, but the risk of paint damage goes up. If you know you're going to be in a place for multiple years, plan to replace the strips annually. It's a small cost for peace of mind.
Or just use the putty knife and baseboard method, which has no adhesive at all.
The putty knife method is the gold standard for a reason. Zero residue, zero risk, completely invisible. The only downside is that it only works where you have baseboard gaps.
Let's shift to the throughput question, because Daniel's last point was about maximizing data throughput without making the place look like a data center. I think this is where a lot of people go wrong. They run 5 separate cables from their router to their desk, and suddenly the living room looks like a network operations center.
The solution is a switch. A single 5-port unmanaged gigabit switch, something like the TP-Link TL-SG-205, costs about $16 and solves the whole problem. You put the switch near your router, in a closet, or behind a piece of furniture. Run one cable from the router to the switch, then distribute from there. The key is that you only need one visible cable going to your desk area, not 5.
And if you need more ports at the desk?
Put a second switch at the desk, 2 switches, 1 cable between them. That single cable carries all the traffic. For a home setup, gigabit is more than enough. Even with multiple 4K streams, game streaming, and file transfers, you're not saturating a gigabit link.
What about the cable itself? Daniel mentioned flat Ethernet cables, and I know there's a performance trade-off there.
There is, and it's worth being honest about. Flat Cat6 cables are more susceptible to crosstalk and signal degradation over long runs. The twisted pairs and round cable cancel out electromagnetic interference. Flat cables can't twist the pairs as effectively because of the form factor. For runs under 55 meters, which is basically any apartment, flat Cat6 will perform fine at gigabit speeds. But if you're running PoE, power over Ethernet, for cameras or access points, use round cable. Flat cables don't dissipate heat as well, and PoE generates heat in the cable.
So the rule of thumb is, flat for data under 55 meters, round for anything with power.
That's the safe rule. And for really long runs, if you're in a weirdly shaped apartment and need more than 50 meters, use round Cat6A. It's shielded, it handles higher frequencies, and it'll do 10 gigabit if you ever upgrade your equipment.
One thing Daniel didn't ask about, but I think is worth mentioning, terminating your own cables. If you're running cable through tight spaces, it's often easier to run unterminated cable and crimp the connectors on afterward.
Pass-through RJ45 connectors make this dramatically easier than it used to be. The wires go all the way through the connector and you trim the excess after crimping. No more guessing whether the wire is seated properly. A decent crimp tool with pass-through connectors is about $30, and it pays for itself the first time you don't have to redo a termination.
And that lets you drill smaller holes if you're going through... well, you're not drilling holes in a rental. But if you're going through an existing cable pass-through or a gap in the closet wall, the unterminated cable is much easier to fish.
Much easier. The connector is the widest part of the cable. Eliminate it during the run, and you can fit through gaps that would otherwise be impossible.
Let's pull all of this together into a practical strategy. Daniel's a renter. He wants wired networking. He doesn't want to repaint when he leaves. What's the tiered approach?
3 tiers, based on run length. For short runs under 15 feet, that's across a room or through one doorway. Flat Cat 6 cable with command clear mini clips along the baseboard. Total cost, maybe $20. Completely reversible in 10 minutes. For medium runs, 15 to 50 feet, that's going between rooms. Round Cat 6A in a paintable D-line raceway along the crown molding or the wall ceiling corner. Paint the raceway to match the wall before you install it, and it practically vanishes. For long runs over 50 feet, terminate your own cables with pass-through connectors and run through closet walls, ceiling tile gaps if you have a drop ceiling, or along the back edge of built-in shelving.
And the move-out checklist.
4 steps. 1. Remove all adhesives using the stretch release technique or heat plus isopropyl. 2. Fill any small nail holes with spackling paste. DAP Drydex is the one that goes on pink and dries white, so you know when it's ready to sand. 3. Touch-up paint using the landlord's original paint if you can get it, or a color-matched sample. Pro tip on move-in day, take a utility knife and cut a 1-inch square of paint from inside a closet. Take that to the paint store for matching. 4. Take photos of every cable run on move-in day and again after removal. If there's a deposit dispute, you've time-stamped evidence.
The paint chip from the closet is brilliant. Nobody ever looks inside the closet.
And even if they do, it's a 1-inch square in the back corner. You spackle it, touch it up with the match paint, and it's invisible.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about the credit card test, because I think there's a failure pattern people don't anticipate. Even if the cable fits through the gap on day 1, the door can settle. Buildings shift with temperature and humidity. That gap that was 1/4 inch in July might be 1/8 inch in January, when the heat is running and the wood dries out.
It's exactly why I said to check after a week. Seasonal movement is real. Interior doors and apartments with steam heat are especially prone to this. The humidity swing between summer and winter can change the gap by 1/16 inch or more. If your cable was borderline in August, it might be compressed in February.
The credit card test isn't a one and done. You check it seasonally.
Or you just avoid the doorframe entirely, which remains my actual recommendation. Baseboards, crown molding, under rugs, behind furniture, there are almost always alternatives. The doorframe is the path of least resistance, which is why everyone defaults to it. But it's also the path with the most long-term risk.
Daniel mentioned running cables under rugs. Is that actually safe?
For flat cables, yes, with caveats. The rug protects the cable from foot traffic, but it also traps heat. Don't run PoE under a rug. And don't run a cable under a rug in a high-traffic path where people are stepping on it constantly. The repeated compression will eventually damage the internal conductors. Under a rug along the edge of the room where nobody walks is fine.
What about the door sweep on exterior doors? You said to go around, but is there any scenario where going under an exterior door works?
Only if the door has a brush-style sweep with enough flexibility to conform around the cable and only with a flat cable. Even then, you're creating a gap for drafts and insects. In a rental, it's almost never worth it. Find another route.
Let's talk about magnetic options, because you mentioned neodymium magnets for metal doorframes. I don't think most renters know this is an option.
It's niche, but incredibly useful if you have metal doorframes. A lot of commercial to residential conversions and newer apartment buildings use metal frames. Small neodymium magnets with adhesive back cable clips attached directly to the metal, no adhesive on the frame at all, When you move out, you pull the magnet off and there's nothing to clean. A pack of 20 magnet cable clips is about $10 online.
For the cable braiding question, Daniel asked about colors specifically. You mentioned wall white, almond, and gray. Is there a way to match more precisely?
The closest you'll get without custom work is TechFlex's color range. They have about 24 standard colors. Wall white is a warm white that matches most modern rental paint. Think Sherwin-Williams Pure White or Benjamin Moore. Simply White. Almond is yellower, matches older off-white and rental beige. If your walls are a specific color, you can paint the sleeving itself. PET takes latex paint reasonably well if you rough it up with fine sandpaper first. But honestly, white sleeving on a white wall is already nearly invisible from 6 feet away. Most people won't notice it unless they're looking for it.
The raceway approach is even cleaner because you're painting the raceway to match exactly.
The raceway approach is the cleanest non-permanent solution, period. D-line raceways are designed to be painted. You paint them before installation, let them dry, then stick them up. The seam between the raceway and the wall basically disappears. The only downside is cost. D-line is about $2 per foot, so a 50-foot run is $100, but you can take it with you when you move. It's reusable.
Which makes it an investment, not a consumable.
Compared to losing a security deposit, $100 is nothing.
I want to hit one more thing before we wrap. The single biggest misconception I see about rental networking. People assume that if the door closes, the cable is fine. That's not true. The door closing is the start of the problem, not the end of it.
That's the misconception right there. A door that closes with a cable under it's applying pressure every time it closes. Over hundreds of cycles, and a door in a busy apartment might open and close 20 times a day. That pressure adds up. The paint cracks, the molding shifts, the cable itself degrades. The door closing isn't a sign that everything is okay. It's the mechanism of damage.
What's the one purchase that solves most of this? If Daniel's listening and wants to fix his setup this weekend, what does he buy?
A $25 kit, 50 feet of flat white Cat 6, a pack of 20 Command Clear mini cord clips, and a small tube of DAP Dry Deck Spackle. That covers 80% of rental networking scenarios. If he wants to go further, add a D-line raceway for the most visible section of the run, and a 5-port gigabit switch to consolidate cables. Total investment under $60, and it all comes with him to the next apartment.
The move-out remediation takes an afternoon, instead of a full day of painting and spudging.
30 minutes, if you did it right. Remove the clips with the stretch release technique. Wipe any residue with isopropyl alcohol. Fill any holes with spackle. Touch up with matched paint. Done. Your security deposit is safe.
Here's the open question I keep coming back to. Wi-Fi 7 is here. Mesh systems with dedicated wireless backhaul are getting genuinely good. We're seeing real-world throughput over a gigabit with low latency. In 3 to 5 years, are we going to look back at running Ethernet through rental apartments the way we now look at running phone lines?
I don't think so, and here's why. Wireless spectrum is shared. It doesn't matter how good your access point is if your neighbor's router is blasting on the same channel. In dense urban apartments, exactly where most renters live, the interference problem doesn't go away with better Wi-Fi. It gets worse because everyone upgrades and everyone's signals get stronger. Wired Ethernet is a dedicated medium. No interference, no contention, no retransmits. Until we solve the physics of shared spectrum, there will always be a case for running a cable.
The rental networking problem isn't going anywhere.
It's not. And the solutions we've talked about today, baseboard tucking, paintable raceways, stretch release adhesives, those are skills that will serve renters for a long time.
We want to hear your rental networking horror stories. The doorframe you cracked, the deposit you lost, the clever solution you invented that we didn't think of. Send them to the show.
If this episode saved you from a security deposit dispute, leave us a review. Tell us your landlord's reaction, ideally the one where they said the place looked better than when you moved in.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
They thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue. We chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.